Hello, and welcome to the Atheist Podcast. If you want to have an open and honest discussion where your opinion will not be judged, you have come to the right place. I'm Jonathan, and we will be discussing beliefs, non-beliefs, and any questions dealing with religions. My co-hosts are George, John, along with our intrepid producer, Robert. And we are the Atheist Podcast.
All right, Verse 17, then to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you, and toil you will eat out of it all the days of your life. Both horns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Anyone want to comment on that before I go to 20?
This is essentially Adam's ordeal from disobeying God. Earlier we read Eve's consequence. So.
Oh yeah, the children and whatnot.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, if you want to continue, and then you guys can let me, you could tell me where you veer off.
Well, I mean, when we're reading the book, I mean, it seems acceptable to me. I don't see any faults in this.
I agree. It's just, it is what it is whenever you get to that point, you know.
I will say this is one of the few, like, you know, going through, if anyone's watched the previous episode, going through, you know, I found faults or just, like, issues with the last two punishments or the last two sets of punishments. But this one seems, like, completely fair. Honestly.
Why? Yeah. What's the difference?
And then reason. I don't know. Like, it seems like punishment fits crime. Like, you ate a plant, and now you gotta, you know, work and toil in the fields and whatnot. Like, it, and you know, you're not gonna be in the lushness that is Eve, wherever Eve may be.
But I think you kind of missed the point with the punishment fits the crime. The crime isn't eating the fruit.
It's disobeying.
It's a disobedience to the supreme God. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, that's probably where I would disagree about punishments fitting crimes, is that you can have the same action done to different people, but depending on who they are, it would yield a different punishment. For example, I don't know if you've heard this example, you know, if I were to say smack a stranger, you know, probably not much happens beyond their annoyance or possibly a little dispute. I mean, even if you were to get the police involved, there's not much going to come from it. But if I were to smack the police officer in the exact same way, it's going to be handled considerably different. And if I were to say smack the president, if I were to ever get close enough, that would be even more different still. So it's the same action, but it's depending on who it is that you do it. That's why you end up with the punishment. So when you disobey God in such a way that you've got a considerable punishment coming.
Instead of saying the crime fits the punishment, the action actually just it's appropriate for the act itself. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, yeah, depending on what we're viewing as the act.
Well, the act was they disobeyed God.
Right.
Which, you know, if you subscribe to that, what's the worst thing you could possibly do in this life? Disobey God.
Right. So in that case, then the punishments generally are going to fit the crimes. I mean, anything less than complete annihilation, I imagine, would be reasonable.
A welcomed punishment.
No.
Well, I mean, not that you'd want it. I mean, I wouldn't want to be punished.
But I mean, just in comparison to, like, punishment or complete annihilation, I'll take some punishment, honestly.
Yeah. Me too. If that's what's going to happen, I'd much rather just be punished than completely annihilated from the face of the earth.
Yeah, that seems like pretty brutal.
Right, verse,
but everyone's good,
verse
though.
20. Yeah, verse 20 to 24, that's just the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all want to go ahead and read it?
Go ahead.
Now the man called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all the living. The Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. Then the Lord God said, "Behold, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil. And now he might stretch out his hand and also take from the tree of life and eat it and live forever." Therefore, the Lord God sent him out to the Garden of Eden to cultivate the ground from which he was taken. So he drove the man out, and at east of the Garden of Eden, he stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword, which turned every direction to guard the way to the tree of life.
In the Bible, it says that he will become like one of us. We already know that God is omniscient. Does that literally mean, because it's kind of read literally, does that mean that if we were to be able to live forever, we would be like God?
What do you mean, omniscient?
Well, I mean,
it's. You mean like God? I mean, if theologically speaking, we do end up living forever from birth on. Our consciousness isn't going to be interrupted by physical death. So you're born, and then from then on, once you die, you go in one of two directions, eternally on, forward.
But my question is, though, it says that if it reads, and I know I can't really say literally, but it literally reads as being that if man were to live forever like one of us, then he would be one of us.
No, it's saying man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil.
Man already knows the difference between good and evil now. The only difference now being that if he eats of the fruit of the tree of life, he will live forever, and therefore he will be like one of us.
Well, it's not referring to eating from the tree of life, living forever, therefore being like one of us. That caveat is attached to knowing good and evil.
But man already knows the difference between good and evil.
I think
the point,
fruit,
if you don't mind me cutting in,
a couple of paragraphs up. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the point Jonathan's really trying to push is that if you read it, obviously different interpretations and whatnot, but if you read it, it kind of reads into this little quandary here where you get to, well, it reads as, no, from now knowing good and evil, he becomes one of us. And so, if you read it just as that with no, I guess,
filter,
colorful linguistic filter or interpretation, it reads as, knowing good and evil. Now that man knows good and evil, he is one of us, a god. And I think that's the end point that Jonathan's trying to reach.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't see it like that. I think it's the comparison was made earlier. The serpent had essentially told Eve that was a selling point. Well, then you're going to know. You're going to end up being like God. It's relating a sense of knowledge of things that they didn't have knowledge of. Not necessarily that they're going to be elevated to some sort of deity or the like.
Just as a red letter note, so everyone can laugh at me, I just finally found the right passage and how to freaking figure out where we are in the Bible as we're reading it.
And for clarification, for all you guys listening at home, we're using Bible Gateway. We're using the New American Standard Bible.
So, I'm a moron. So, you can make fun of me, John.
I have nothing to add to that.
Because I said it.
I think that's rather uncontroversial, and we could move on.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm completely.
I thought you might.
No, I don't have a problem calling myself dumb.
Going back to what I said during the pre-show, that's all I gotta say is John's statement right there. It goes right back to what I said when he first came on.
All right, I'm going to try this myself. Well, actually, let's see. Where are we at? We're at
Genesis 4, Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel. So we drove them out. Okay, maybe I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Genesis 4, come on, work for me. Daddy needs a new pair of verses. And now the man had relations with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. And she said, I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord. Again, she gave birth to his brother, Abel. Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. So it came about that in the course of time that Cain brought forth offerings to the Lord of the fruit of the ground, and Abel, on his part, also brought his firstlings of flock and their fat portions. And the Lord regarded Abel and for his offerings, but for Cain and his offerings he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fell? If you do well, will you not... If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. And it has its desires for you. But you shall master it. Cain told his brother Abel, I hate reading. I love to read, but I can't read.
Out loud.
Yeah, pretty much. That's my inner voice. Cain told his brother, and it came about when they were in the field, and Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. All right, listeners, I will not do that again. Thought I'd try it out for one time. Okay. Why does God like fat instead of fruit?
Well, I think let's go back to
I think he just, you know, there's some bad memories attached to fruit.
No, I don't think
breakup.
I don't think so. It's more so theological. It says Abel brought on the firstlings of his flock and their fat portions. Lord had regard for this, but for Cain he didn't. What was Cain's offering, specifically?
If he was a tiller of the ground, we can assume maybe grapes or grains.
No, I mean, what does it say was his offering?
I got you. It says Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. And that's all it says.
Right. Okay, and then Abel's was the firstlings of his flock. So I think... I think from this, I get an impression that you have Cain just sort of brought some stuff that he grew, and Abel brought the first and the best. And I think it was more or less an offering of quality, not necessarily the content.
So would that mean that had he brought the very first of his... I'm not a freaking farmer, so I don't know what to say. The very beginnings of his crops, would it have played out differently?
I think it's hard to speculate, but I think so. I mean, what else would be... What substantively would be the difference between the two?
Again, I'm not a farmer. I have no.
No. What I mean is that there doesn't seem to be any moral difference, so to speak, between something that you would grow and something that you would raise. I mean, there's no indication here that it's the kind of offering that was brought.
May I posit that perhaps but since we're after the fall, it could be kind of like the texting effect nowadays. Whenever you mean something but you don't actually mean exactly what you're saying, and then you get in trouble for it. So perhaps God might have been like, "Okay, I like this. I don't know, dude. You know, you're bringing me this thing, and You know, I really, really like it a lot, but it doesn't...
Well, no, I get it. But there's no command to bring something. You know, it seems like they took it upon themselves to bring an offering to God, and it seems to be a difference in quality over substance. They didn't have to, but because they decided to, I think it ultimately showed their feelings.
There's some vegans that are really going to be pissed off at you, dude.
Oh, I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with vegans. Do vegans even listen to podcasts?
I don't know. We just lost like 4 listeners, so I'm not worried about it.
Hey, it happens.
All right. Since I have proven the fact that I can't read worth a crap, Jay, let's read about Abel and God and Cain.
So we're at
9.
Verse 9. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And he said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" He said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you cultivate the ground, it will no longer yield its strength to you. You will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is too great to bear. Behold, you have driven me from this day to the face of the earth to the ground, and from your face I will be hidden, and I will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." So the Lord said to him, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain's vengeance will be taken upon him sevenfold." And the Lord appointed a sign for Cain, so that no one finding him would slay him. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden.
If there is one oft-stated thing that came out of the Bible is, "Am I my brother's keeper?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will give it that much. You know, that's a really, really touching, if you think about it, statement. Even though it may be stated in a different manner, that is a powerful, powerful sentence.
All right, so what do you have any issues with this here?
I don't. I just wanted to
point that. No,
You know, I'm my brother's keeper. That is a powerful statement right there. It really is, in my opinion.
I can agree with that. No, I've never had an issue. Believe it or not, Cain and Abel is honestly one of my favorite chapters or stories from the Bible. I've always just liked the story. I don't know if that says something about me. I never necessarily liked the whole Cain killing Abel thing. But I mean, all in all, it's a good story.
You don't have a brother, do you?
I do.
You do? You can't imagine, yeah. You know, I'm pissed at you. I'm going to beat the hell out of you.
Oh, imagine. My mother breeded nothing but titans. We fight in this house.
I really don't have much else to say about it. I mean, we're reading the narrative now, so I'm not adverse to anything that's been said so far, or at least in this. You, John, anything?
No. Like I said, I'm already on point with this one. This is my team.
All right.
He's wearing the new American. He's wearing the new American version jersey.
Just so everyone knows, we didn't know how far we were going to get tonight. We're going to probably skip over all of the begats, or I had this person, I had that person, or gave birth to this person, or gave birth to that person.
All right. So what about the clerk in Kentucky? What's your take?
Well, I believe before I give my take, in case I'll explain to the audience, in case you guys weren't aware, there's a clerk in Kentucky by the name of, if I'm not mistaken, Kim Davis.
Yes.
She wants this, the ruling from SCOTUS or the Supreme Court of the United States finally came down for gay marriage, in favor of gay marriage. She refused to do her job and issue marriage license. Now, not just marriage licenses to same-sex couples, but marriage licenses, period. Like, just at all, straight, no one was getting a marriage license from her, citing her deeply held religious beliefs. And as she believes it's not an act of defiance, but an upholding of the Lord's words, and the Lord's law. So after refusing to comply several times with federal law, since she's a federal employee or a state employee, she's now been sentenced to jail. I'm not entirely sure about how much time she got. I'm sure it was nothing extreme. But people, especially evangelicals, because she is in the South and Bible Belt, are treating her as if she's a martyr. Personally, to answer your question, John, I mean, I feel like putting her in jail maybe was a little extreme, but at the end of the day, she wasn't doing her job and she didn't quit. Like, if she quit and said, you know what, I quit or something like that, I would have been perfectly fine with that. But the fact that she thought she was going to be able to stay in the position, not do her job, and still get paid. I also find issue, and I know this is her personal life, but I find issue with her speaking on how she's upholding the word of the Lord, the word of God, when this woman's had, what, was it three divorces? Like, she's been remarried.
Four.
She, in fact, husband, yeah, four. Husband four number two, she got married. Yeah, right. Three divorces. Husband number two is husband number four, which is also against, and I'm sure we'll get to it at some point, if we haven't already, before I got here. I don't remember, yeah, that's Moses, never mind. I don't remember, or Leviticus. I don't remember, you know, anywhere where it said, yeah, you guys can get divorced. Like, it's very specifically stated in there. That's a no-no.
I would,
and that's considered adultery.
I would like to speak about the divorce stuff. It's, yes, it may on the outset seem very hypocritical, but one of the things that I'm really strongly against is she's a woman. If she wasn't happy, she shouldn't have to be held to even, well, okay.
No, I completely agree.
You know,
she shouldn't have to be stuck in a position where she doesn't want to be. But at the same time, she left relationships, or relationships fell apart, however, and she went her separate way to find her own happiness by denying these people their marriage licenses, these things that now are, per the Supreme Court, their right as a U.S. citizen. She's denying other people happiness. And so my level is not because of the divorce, and it's just hypocritical on that level. It's because at the end of the day, I do believe that you should be able to be divorced and be happy, whether you're with somebody, without somebody. You should go where you feel happiest. And she's denying that same right, that same ability to other couples.
So in the end, is it your view that you have to check your moral convictions at the door when you walk into a business, or only particular moral views?
Not necessarily business. I feel like when it comes to a business and when it comes to a federal or state, which I consider still
county,
federal, but she's still under the rules of, not only, you know, federal. Once you put yourself in a public position as a public servant, yes, you do have to either check certain things or find another job. You can't be working with the FDA and say, No, you know, this, for whatever reason, you're a Muslim and you're assigned to pork and you're saying, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't do my job. That's obviously not the job for you, because that comes with the job.
That's actually
and
a
that
little
is
bit
a deeply
of an
held
argument ad hominem, or not ad hominem, ad absurdum. You know, I mean, no, I can't imagine a situation where a Muslim is going to be with the USDA and willingly want to oversee pork slaughter.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they can't, like, if that's what is assigned to them. Like, let's say they wake up one morning and they're like, hey, this is where you're going to inspect some stuff. Like, that's your job.
Well, However, the country does have a long history of making accommodations for religious convictions. Now, I think her mistake was that she denied everybody a marriage license. What she ought to have done, the correct course of action, and I don't think that she would either be in jail or that people would be looking down on her the way they are, if she personally stepped back and allowed a different clerk to issue those licenses. Now, if she had that moral conviction, listen, Mr. Jones and Mr. Smith, I can't issue this because in my conscience won't allow that. However, Clerk Davis over here will be happy to help you, which is what should have happened. She should have handled it just like that. Had she handled it like that, I think she would have a whole lot more support. Her thing is she also part of her defense is that her name as the chief clerk goes on to the marriage licenses and that is somehow an endorsement. And I don't know, I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think people know generally that those things come pre-printed with whoever's name on them, just like our money comes printed with the Secretary of the Treasury and the other guy. Yeah.
I think in the end, all she should have done was just do her job. If she doesn't want to actually do the act, there are other people that can do it for her. She doesn't. It's not like she's tacitly standing by and just staying silent just because she has to stay silent. She could have just stepped back, and everything would have been okay.
And I would have supported that decision, honestly, because even though I may disagree with her reasoning behind it, at least the job is getting done. At the end of the day, she's still doing her job.
You know, I think that is a little bit of wishful thinking. If you think back to the bakers and the photographers who were petitioned by same-sex couples to either bake or photograph weddings, they were not satisfied with the baker or the photographer referring out to somebody who they knew would do the job. I remember reading that they had at first said, listen, we can't do this as part of our part of my convictions, but you know what, I know somebody who can, and that wasn't good enough for them. They went and sued, and I believe it's Washington or even in New Mexico there was a photographer where it was ruled that they had to do it. So I don't know that – I think that would have been a moral solution for her. I don't know if that would have been a satisfactory solution for them.
I don't know either. When it comes to that, because I'm not – you know, each state law is a little bit different than the other. But one state law is the separation of church and state. And
that's not a law anywhere, by the way.
But you know that she had to – there's no way that she was going to win this. I understand that this is really, really closely held to her heart, you know, and she believes it whole being. But there's no way she was going to win. I mean, whenever it comes to this, there was no way she was going to win.
Well, she would have won had she handled it in a way similar to how I suggested, because then nobody could claim that they were actually being discriminated against, because they were getting, because they would have been getting their service.
But it's just, I mean, the way she handled it, I mean, that it's just not the way that would.
No, the way she handled it, she was bringing a lot of undue attention to herself. But just real quick to one of Jay's points about, she's on her fourth marriage and she's got a little bit of a history of questionable relationship crafting. I mean, I don't know that disqualifies anybody. I mean, I think deep down all of us are hypocrites to one degree or another. We all have standards that we hold up on the one hand, but then on the other it seems a little inconsistent. I think at best you could just say that she might be a little bit inconsistent and should look within herself to straighten out some of that consistency, but I don't know that that counts as a mark against her.
Well, I don't consider it a mark against her at all. I mean, as I started out saying, you know, it's it's just one of those things, you know. I would never want to have someone that's married to be in an unhappy marriage. I could never imagine that kind
okay,
of thing.
Okay, well, let me ask you, what exactly is a marriage then? I mean, because what it sounds like you're advocating, you know, without being explicit, is essentially just long-term dating, official on-paper dating. Marriage traditionally has been more than just, you know, you stay until you're not happy anymore and then you just ditch who you're with. It was about commitment through the good times and the bad, when you're happy and when you're not, and you sort of have that pledge to one another that you're going to be there to support and hold up. Well, so what do you think about that?
About one of the things that were that was a point of contention was the two gentlemen, one of the two gentlemen in the video that, if you haven't seen it, we'll add it in the show notes, is these two gentlemen have been together for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not commitment? I mean, is that not literally just love? I mean, I've been this coming March,
sure.
This coming March, I will have been with my wife for 17 years.
Cool.
That's commitment.
That's
right.
My entire
life. I understand that. So, but my question is more along the lines of, and you're probably saying it without putting as much thought as I'm putting into it. Just because you happen to not. Once you fall out of happiness, I don't think you run down to the courthouse and start filing papers, is my point.
Well, why shouldn't those two people also be allowed for the exact same opportunities?
What opportunities did they not have?
They don't have this. I mean, well, first of all, it's not legally acknowledged. They don't get the same tax exempts that straight people have. They don't, you know, you can't file as married.
Well first, I think we should clarify it. It doesn't have anything to do with sexual desire or orientation, because a homosexual man could marry a lesbian woman. The laws regulated gender, not sexual orientation. So whether or not sexually attracted to each other never played a part. Now, what the laws to allow same-sex marriage did was to essentially take into consideration and not concrete identifiers for themselves. Like, for example, before same-sex marriage was legal in Connecticut, where I'm from, I couldn't marry my friend for the convenience of it. A guy, say a friend of mine, Steve, I could never marry Steve just for the convenience of it. However, that didn't mean that I was being discriminated against in any way. But people, even where one man, one woman was the law of the land, same-sex couples could still make those commitments to each other. They could buy rings. They could walk down the aisle of a church. They could be in front of family and friends. They could pledge their undying love for one another. They could enter into property
binding
contracts. Oh, well, what difference does legally binding make to the couple?
Because let's say in the case of someone dying, obviously, you know, life insurance and things to take care of people's death and at least in several cases I've seen, there are obviously older couples who have been around since, you know, the first women's rights and all that have been around, the bra burning incidents, that are so legendary. And what happened was one of her partner, you know, her partner died. And the remaining family, because this woman had no legal rights to her partner, and her partner's body after death, it goes to the next of kin in certain states. Like, even at 18, if I don't have, let's say me and Jonathan hooked up, right? Yeah. And let's say one man, one woman is law of the land. Oh, yeah, Jonathan, checking you out, man. let's say one man, one woman is law of the land. Well, something horrific happens to me. I die or something like that. And let's say I expressed to Jonathan before I had ways that I wanted to, you know, my my afterlife, my, you know, my body to be disposed of, and because I call it being disposed of, and it doesn't mean to offend anyone. And I just had a way that I wanted that whole situation to go. Well, my family, being religious as they are, could completely reject that, especially if, for whatever reason, I didn't have it in paper, or they, it just, you know, or I just told Jonathan,
you just hit
the
nail
my partner.
You just hit the nail on the head right there. That's how you solve all those issues. You don't have to redefine marriage laws, which do have consequences for people's First Amendment rights. Once you realize that you're going to be in a relationship with, say, Jonathan, that's when you create that living trust that describes what you want done with your body and property issues, that you two could enter into a property, and that when one of you dies, everything transfers over to the other. Those are all things that could be done without changing the marriage laws.
I would actually like to make two points here. For one, yes, there is a legal recourse that, as to John's point, you can actually
can
have,
be taken.
Yes. The other, I forget what the other thing I was going to say. There's legal recourse that you can take. You know, I have a living will with my wife. As I'm trying to collect my thoughts, I had something to say to you too, John. But it's just a respect thing, I guess. Right. You know, I mean, it's. I understand not wanting to redefine the laws of marriage, but I mean, it's just respect. Can you understand? I'm not gay. I can't speak
to
someone that's gay. It's just demeaning.
No, it's not demeaning unless you're looking to be a victim, I don't think, because there's plenty of things that I'm not entitled to and plenty of things that I can't participate in. But that doesn't mean that I'm being demeaned. I mean, I can't think of an example, but I couldn't. There's certain clubs I couldn't join, I'm sure, because I don't qualify because of one characteristic or another. That doesn't mean that I'm being demeaned. But people,
yes, there
don't,
is an example. All right. Now I don't really want to take it here, but I'm going to take it here. Jay, say you wanted to join a certain golf club, a country club. You're a person of color. Do you think that you would be allowed the exact same rights as someone else? Now, it might not be explicit that because you're a person of color, you won't be able to join.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that you might not be able to join the country club?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. Or even if I was in the country club, I would be set aside as my own. You know, I'd be treated differently. They may not tell me, but there'd be a certain way that they handled me and talked to me compared to how they talked among themselves. And I mean, it's not necessarily, boisterous. It's not like they're out there, you know, actively screaming out, yes, we're discriminating against them, but pay close enough attention. And I'm sure even if I did get in the country club, you would see it.
And I'm not saying that it's not the exact same thing, John, but
I don't think it's even close.
I would venture to say it's close. And the reason I say that is because at the end of the day, just as I can't do anything about my heritage, my skin tone, my mother's parents, I can't do anything about that. And I don't know where you stand on this issue, but I know a lot of evangelicals, a lot of theists from many religions say that homosexuality is this thing that can be controlled in Zimbabwe. and is often said as like they're driving along, like they have a Taurus or whatever. And it was said, comically, of course, but it was said that basically the taxi driver told this Taurus, hey, you know, we have a nice place here and, you know, you follow the laws, everything be okay, but just don't be gay. As if being gay is just something you just flip on and off. You see what I'm saying? It's the same. It's just the same as race. There's nothing you can do about it. Like no matter what
thing. That's the thing is there are plenty of people who would admit that at one point in their life they were same sex attracted and they no longer are. Sexuality is regularly and routinely seen to be fluid in a lot of people, maybe not everybody, but it is seen. There's stories of, I remember I put it up on my website because it was so ridiculous. This guy got knocked on the head from some sort of accident. He woke up and he was attracted to men. I'm not saying that it's a light switch that you flip on and off. What I'm saying is that it's not immutable, like skin color, hair color, eye color, things like that. It might not be something that everybody experiences, but it's certainly not shown to be immutable or genetic.
And I guess this is going to be, to a degree, a slight disagree or agree to disagree point, because, again, I feel as if, especially when you get into relationships where you're with the same person for, we remember the example was 17 years. I mean, that's as long as my life. And these people were together. I'm pretty sure they've been through the same fights as their heterosexual counterparts, dealt with the exact same issues, plus some, because they were homosexual, as their heterosexual counterparts. And I don't like this definition of marriage is one man, one woman. Honestly, I feel like, I mean, there were homosexual marriages and homosexual relationships that were taken seriously that have been documented in places like Africa well before Christianity was even a thought. Like these,
for example,
these are things,
for example, I haven't heard of that. What is it specifically?
I would actually have to pull it up, and I'll make sure there's a link down in the show notes. I'll send it to Rob or one of you. But you know, going through, because there are certain parts, you know, certain tribes and things that keep very intricate, you know, details, especially marriages, because marriage is no property. At the end of the day, depending on what rose-colored glasses you want to put on, if you don't have any on, marriage, women were treated as property. Decades, millennia ago. And so it's like a property record. Marriage records were really just like a property record at that time. And so they were just like other property records, were very detailed, very well kept. And in certain parts of Africa, there were examples of same-sex marriage. And it was just considered marriage. You had partner A's name. Well, and it was usually between males. Partner A's name, partner B's name. It was not classified as homosexual marriage, or, you know, say there was none of that. It was just on the marriage, you know, the marriage or the marriage records as a marriage. And I'll make sure there's a link in the show note. There are other places where homosexual relationships were just average relationships. So why we come with this definition of marriage being one man, one woman, there's an issue I have with that.
And gentlemen, I think that is about as much as we're going to be able to cover in this episode. If we want to come back to it on the next episode, we can do that too. John, you mentioned that you have a blog. Would you like to tell us what the website is for that? So that way, if any of the listeners want to come to it, they can go there and read your thoughts further about this particular topic.
Sure, you could find it at siftingreality.com. That's S-I-F-T-I-N-G, reality.com. It's pretty easy to navigate topically. I haven't had any problems with people being able to figure that out. I'm just starting to get back into writing. I kind of went on an almost year-long hiatus. I just sort of lost the motivation to write for a while, but I always kept it up. So.
Now, what are some of the... And this, I guess, because we're going to be doing a Meet the Host episode individual between myself and the other ones. What? Yeah.
What you mean by other ones, Jonathan?
Uh-huh. Yeah. What can the listener?
he means the ones not allowed to golf clubs. You know what he means.
Oh, goodness gracious. That's wrong. That's so wrong. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, so the Hispanics.
Somebody had to say it.
Uh-huh.
Somebody had to.
So if the listeners decide they want to go, if in quotation marks, they decide they want to go to your website, what's some of the stuff that they can expect to have there? Because, you know, this is, you know, it's important to me that you get as much play as everybody else does.
Yeah. Well, it's generally current events. I take on religion, politics, current events, same-sex marriage, abortion, atheism, pretty much anything that happens to strike me, something that I want to write about. Something that you will notice is that when I do discuss same-sex marriage and abortion. I never bring religion into it. So any arguments that you see up there, you are not going to be able to come back and say, well, you can't just quote the Bible, you can't just quote religion, because you're not going to find it there. For those two particular issues, anyway, because I find that that's the most divisive.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's something, and I'm actually happy that that's what you do. You know, you don't bring religion into the conversation, because that's something that we're doing here. But it's not something, if you have an issue, you shouldn't always just bring religion into it, because it's not always religion. I mean, there's plenty of other positions whenever we hit on topics of same-sex marriage, abortion, immigration, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's not always just religion that plays into these things. So I would like for any of the listeners that are interested that they go to John's blog and kind of look at it, and we'll add those into the show notes also.
Yeah, you should also note that I have a pretty liberal comment policy. I'm not really into policing dissent. Actually, I think that makes for the best conversation, and that always gives me new ideas for posts. So disagreement isn't frowned upon. I think that's fairly rare on Christian blogs and whatnot, but I find that a lot of atheists and dissenters are banished. But people are free to go and give their opinion. Just know that I'm going to be coming back around to give mine back.
It's the same thing as always. Everyone has their preconceived ideas about atheism, about Christianity, about Islam, about everything. You know, it's always the
about
same
the force.
Thing. Yeah. Happy Force Friday, by the way. Anybody that listens to us, tonight is the night that all the toys came out for Star Wars, The Force Awakens. So that's my nerd plug.
Yep, Star Wars, beam me up. Beam me up, baby. I love it.
Use the Force, Harry. All right, well,
Anakin Skywalker wanted a game of Quidditch.
All right, listeners. Well, it was great to have the conversation tonight, and we'll talk to you next week, okay? And bye.
All right, next week.
And that's it for tonight, folks. I'd like to thank John, George, and of course, all of you for joining in on the conversation. Please make sure to like us on Facebook. You can find the links to our page and all of the other associated websites in the show notes. We're now live on iTunes. If you like us, please give us a rating, maybe even a good review. That always helps. If you want to support the show and any of the other projects associated with Rationality Unleashed Media, please feel free to donate via our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/rationalityunleashed. Because we post quite a bit of content, please make sure you set a monthly maximum if you don't want to go over a certain budget. If you want to make a one-time donation to RU Media, please use our GoFundMe page at www.gofundme.com/RU Media. Your support helps us with all of the hosting costs, equipment, and all of the other costs associated with producing quality content across platforms. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to the Atheist Podcast, a production of Rationality Unleashed Media, rationalityunleashed.net, or you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/rationalityunleashed.